It is Friday, December 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming your way, a U.S. Secretary of State is ready to talk with Russia about possible progress in Syria. We'll talk with VOA's Pam Dawkins about that. The Paris climate talks are extended by one more day. You'll find out why. And an Australian man goes viral against a U.S. car company that he says sold him a lemon.
But then they sold me a lemon, man.
I made a mistake, I bought a Jeep. I made a mistake, I bought a Jeep, yeah.
That's what he said he did. Stay with us, that's all ahead. We begin with the U.S. Secretary of State. John Kerry said yesterday that in spite of differences with the United States over the fate of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, Russia has been what he called constructive in the multinational effort to find a political settlement for Syria. Kerry made his comments as he announced plans to travel to Moscow next week for talks on Syria, as well as the unrest in Ukraine. Joining us is the person who penned that, and that is the VOA State Department correspondent, Pam Dawkins. Pam, what's different here? What's going on?
What's going on is that the United States and Russia are trying to find some common ground, especially on the situation in Syria. And they do have some aspects in common in that Russia and the United States are both among the 20 world powers that have been taking part in the so-called Vienna talks on Syria. And that goal has been to come up with a plan for a political transition in the country. But on the other hand, Russia also has its own agenda in Syria, and that is that it has been supporting President Bashar al-Assad. And, of course, Russia and the United States have both launched military campaigns over Syria, but they're not exactly on the same page when it comes to the targets. So these are some of the issues that Kerry hopes to address with his Russian counterparts during this trip.
Find it interesting that earlier today, Russian President Putin has come out with some remarks that said it seems to be almost deflecting some of the concerns of the United States, one being that their sole issue as far as their attacks in Syria is to go after terrorists that might be a possible future attack or problems for Russia itself. Do you see any of that going on, and do you see any movement by Russia and maybe a possible meeting with Putin when Mr. Kerry arrives in Russia?
There is a possibility of a meeting with Putin when Kerry arrives in Russia, and I think overall these two sides are trying to find more commonality, even if they cannot agree on every aspect of the Syria campaign, to try to find more common ground to move this process forward. There appears to be a strong desire on both sides to do so. And of course, another focal point during this trip will be the situation in Ukraine. A sticking point for Russia has been the sanctions imposed by the United States and European Union after Russia annexed Crimea last year. Also, the U.S. says Russia has been backing the separatists who are leading the rebellion in eastern Ukraine. And although Ukraine and the separatists have agreed on a ceasefire, there have been concerns about violations on both sides. So there's a lot on the agenda to discuss in Ukraine also.
Secretary of State Mr. Kerry has been very busy on the telephone. We coupled that with some of the testimony with Defense Secretary Ash Carter here in Washington the other day, saying that there is a big push to expand the coalition that is fighting ISIS. This is all part of the same thing, I take it, right? Kerry has been on the phone a lot, right?
He has been, and there are really two efforts that are underway. There is the military effort, and then there are also the diplomatic efforts that are underway. Kerry, of course, has been focused more on the diplomatic side, which includes the so-called Vienna talks that have taken place, and there's a possibility of a third round of talks, possibly in the United States later this month. In addition to that, another outgrowth of that was a meeting in Saudi Arabia that involved the moderate Syrian opposition leaders. They wrapped up a meeting yesterday with a broad framework for a plan to choose leaders who may at some point early next year negotiate with members of the Syrian government on some sort of long-term political transition plan.
Well, ahead of the trip to Moscow, if and when the climate talks come to an end in Paris, he has another stop in Rome. What's that for?
Kerry and his Italian counterpart, the Italy's foreign minister, are going to co-chair talks on Libya while in Rome on Sunday, and it's a meeting that's also going to include some other players, Russia, Britain, China, and France among them. And this meeting comes at a time when Libya is dealing with challenges on several fronts that have left the international community feeling uneasy. The UN-led effort to help Libya set up a unity government has not yet been finalized. And also there is growing concern internationally that militant groups like Islamic State are taking advantage of this political instability in Libya to get a stronghold in the country.
Well, it sounds like the U.S. Secretary of State has another busy week ahead of him, and that means, I guess, fortunately for you, so do you. Pam Dawkins, thanks so much. Pam Dawkins is the VOA State Department correspondent. Thanks, Pam.
You're welcome.
We move now from U.S. Secretary of State Kerry moving on from Paris onto Rome and then Russia to what he has been doing along with the rest of the world in Paris. The U.S. Secretary of State has said that a lot of progress has been made at the U.N. climate talks in Paris, but some very difficult issues must be resolved. We are pleased to welcome to International Edition the environmental team leader from our German counterpart, Deutsche Welle. And her name is Sonja Dean. And Sonja, thanks so much for agreeing to do this. What are some of these very difficult issues that are being faced at the conference?
Well, I boil it down to a few categories of problems. So one is the target. Are we talking about 1.5 or 2 degrees temperature rise since pre-industrial times? Another is, of course, the means. Money is always a topic. So who pays not only for adaptation, as it's called, to the effects of climate change, but also for transitioning the energy systems, especially in developing countries? Then there's the time frame. So how often will this be reviewed? It's been described as very important to have this, quote, ratchet up mechanism where countries review their targets and their commitments for emissions reductions about every 5 years. And then this big topic of transparency. So how do countries account for and report upon their national commitments? So that's sort of how I might break it down.
Well, if people haven't heard yet, the conference has been extended, so they have time to come to some kind of agreement on Saturday rather than today, Friday. And let's focus, if we can, on one of the bigger disagreements, and that is the financial responsibility that poorer nations should take for the cost of cutting their greenhouse gas emissions.
Yes, it is certainly a sticking point. It remains a sticking point. And I think when we talk about this, the word that's come up, it's a bit of a technical term, is differentiation. And so if you think about it in terms of, so the world has X amount of fossil fuels left to burn in order to reach this 1.5 or 2 degree increase in temperatures, then you think about, well, who gets that piece? You know, how is this pie sort of divided up? And this is where, as you mentioned, developing countries such as India, Bolivia, China, that are still, you know, moving transition. I mean, they're basically still developing, and they have energy systems at various stages of development. So they're more keen to be able to burn their fossil fuels and, you know, go through their reserves. And they say, they point to industrialized countries like U.S. and the EU and say, look, you've already burned up so much, the rest should really be ours. That relates to finance in the sense of how, again, to pay for the transitions of the energy system. So that's sort of one example, and that's been a real major point here.
There is a lot to be done, and maybe not enough time and maybe not enough resources to do everything that has to be done. But do you think that overall, from what you've observed so far, a dent has been made or can be made as far as the problems that is facing that are being faced by the world?
Well, there's a lot of hope, and I've understood that there's also a good atmosphere among the negotiators, and there's a real sense of working together, for the most part, of course, with a few blockers on a few topics, but there's a huge hope for compromise, and that's really what is needed at this point, is to come together. It's a consensus process, which, if you think about it, with 195 countries, like the whole world, that's kind of a huge challenge right there. But the hope, again, is that a treaty will be agreed upon, this legal framework that should send a strong signal. And that's really the key point, to send a signal that we need to, you know, change our energy systems and move away from fossil fuels. That's the overarching concept.
Sonja Dean is the environmental team leader for the German broadcaster Deutsche Welle. And Sonja, thank you so much for joining us here at VOA's International Edition. We greatly appreciate it. This is International Edition. While negotiators are wrangling over who will cut their carbon emissions and by how much in Paris, the rest of us may soon be able to play along at home. VOA's Steve Barragona takes a look at what's called the carbon game.
If you're wondering why striking a climate deal has been so hard, play a round of the carbon game. It's a video board game that Radboud University researcher Linda Carton and her colleagues are developing. Carton spoke by Skype.
I like to make the game simple so that people can grasp the problem within 30 minutes.
The game divides the world into six blocks, the four top emitters, China, the United States, Europe, and India, and the rest, partitioned into developed and developing countries. Each block starts the game with coins representing the greenhouse gas emissions it's currently expected to emit through 2100.
It's a simple assignment. Try to limit your emissions to 2 degrees.
That's the maximum warming that experts say the planet can take without catastrophic consequences. What's not simple is how to do it. The game begins with enough carbon on the table to raise the temperature by 4.5 degrees. That's the high end of current projections.
So then we say, well, let's negotiate. It's your floor now. Who starts leading the world towards a low carbon future?
Players do so at their own peril. Lowering carbon emissions lowers their GDP per capita as well. So you'll often hear this around the table.
It's not my turn. Let somebody else, take away the hard part. So they hope that in the end they can do a little bit of free riding.
But the other players are going to notice.
Everybody blames and shames you that you are the free rider of the game.
Cuts hurt some players worse than others, depending on how carbon intensive their economies are. Here's what happened at one game played here at the Paris Climate Summit.
The woman who played India made a big pledge, and then she saw what she did to the GDP per capita, and then she said, oh no, put it back, you know, my people cannot take this.
And here's how that game ended.
Oh, we sacrificed the Indian economy and all the people living there, but we saved the world.
Carton says it's a powerful message for players.
The lesson is that it's a very long way down, 4.5 degrees to 2 degrees. And we all need to reduce our emissions, and we need to look at each other and saying, it's your turn.
In a later round, players can aim for a happier ending by investing in renewable energy. The game is still under development, but Carton and her colleagues want to use it as a teaching tool for their younger students.
I want to educate them about the magnitude of the task that's ahead of us for their generation of emission reduction. Because you have to reduce emissions like 80% worldwide, that's not a small thing.
She also hopes to develop a smartphone app so people can play Climate Negotiator anywhere. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Paris.
Well, there are a lot of stories, as we have been covering for you. There are even more, and we're going to check in with VOA's Charlie Hansler now, who's covering social media. What's hot?
Well, considering the Paris Climate Agreement, the two most popular hashtags talking about this online on Twitter are hashtag Paris Agreement and hashtag COP21. But it seems it's kind of hard for the average Twitter user to make these quick, snappy comments when it's such complicated international
talks. And how many characters, yeah.
Yeah, so that's been happening. And also Kabul, just typing in the word Kabul, that is one of the most popular Twitter.
Popular, yes. Big explosion. We'll tell you about that just a little bit later. Anything else real quickly?
Also, the hashtag Syria is clearly very popular on Twitter as well with the international agreements. Most Twitter users seem to be talking about the refugee situation more than the conference, though.
Charlie, appreciate it. Charlie Hansler telling us what is happening as far as social media is concerned. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
The dwarf planet Ceres is the largest object in the asteroid belt, which lies between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter in our solar system. And now scientists say they may know what's behind the dwarf planet's mysterious bright spots as well as its origin. Studying data gathered by NASA's Dawn spacecraft, the researchers outlined their findings in a pair of new studies published in the journal Nature. In one study, researchers found evidence that the bright spots are actually deposits of a salt called hexahydrite. Researchers writing in the second study examined the composition of Ceres and found that it contains ammonia-rich clays. Finding this material has the scientists thinking that Ceres may have either originated or had been formed with the material from the outer solar system and not its current location in the asteroid belt. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Here on International Edition, we discuss quite a bit what social media is doing and what the so-called social media revolution can make happen. And Jim Randall, VOA's business reporter, is with us now in studio. And Jim, this deals with what an Australian small businessman did after he bought a car. Tell us more about it, if you will.
He was deeply unhappy with the car, and that's not unusual. People complain about products. But this guy went on YouTube, did a wonderfully slickly produced video that complained about the Jeep being a lemon, which is kind of shorthand for being unreliable and unsafe, and it got more than 2.1 million views on YouTube alone. Needless to say, Chrysler was a little annoyed.
Yeah, 2.1 million. What did he have to say? I mean, what did he do?
He said basically they sold him a lemon, that they were unreasonable. But he says it in rhymed couplets. He says it in a rap song. And in the background, there are these very attractive young women dancing. And there's an actor dressed up in a lemon costume. And the guy in the lemon suit jumps out of the Jeep and tackles him at one point. I mean, it's hilarious.
Let's hear a little bit of this. Here it is right now.
But then they sold me a lemon, man. I made a mistake, I bought a Jeep. I made a mistake, I bought a Jeep, yeah. I made a mistake, I bought a Jeep. Don't you make a mistake and buy a Jeep, yeah. I made a mistake, I bought a Jeep. I made a mistake, I bought a Jeep, yeah. I made a mistake, I bought a Jeep. Don't you make a mistake and buy a Jeep, yeah. I had a master plan, I spent $60,000.
If you want to see and hear the rest of this, you can get it on the VOAnews.com website, is that correct?
Yes.
Now, what's happened with Chrysler? What did Chrysler do now?
He contacted, he and Jeep went back and forth, and he wrote to me just a little bit ago to say that they have now reached a resolution. He didn't specify what that was, but an earlier offer would have had included a gag order, which would have prohibited him or even his infant son from talking about the Jeep or anything else. So he rejected that.
Well, I love what you wrote in your piece on the VOAnews.com website. According to him, you said social media changes everything but must be clever to have a significant impact. I think he was clever in this instance.
He certainly was, and I interviewed the point of the story is not one angry man and his car. The point is that all these experts that I spoke to said that the explosion in e-commerce is taking over. I mean, it's and that the same people who use online means to buy things are also very likely to use online reviews to decide if they're going to buy this car or that car. They're going to go to this restaurant or that restaurant. And he said, it's changing the relationship. It's a revolution in the relationship between between customers and companies. It's changing the balance of power.
Things do change. Keep on changing. Jim Randall, VOA's business reporter, thanks once again for being with us.
Always a delight to be here.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. Story we talked about earlier, here's what has happened in Afghanistan where a car bomb exploded. The explosion was claimed by the Taliban. It hit a diplomatic area of central Kabul Friday, and Spanish officials said they believe their embassy had been attacked. The Afghan Deputy Interior Minister, Mohammad Ayub Salangi, said the car bomb struck near a foreign guest house in Shapur. That's an area with embassies and other diplomatic buildings seem to be one of the safer parts of the Afghan capital. He said that one person was wounded. Additional details of the attack were not immediately available, but the Spanish embassy is in the area. And a Spanish government spokeswoman said officials believe the embassy had been attacked. Check out voanews.com for all the latest news. That is our program. Again, visit that website at voanews.com. I'm Ira Melman. Thanks so much for being with us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
High-level representatives of nearly 200 countries have assembled in Paris to hammer out a global agreement to hold back rising temperatures. By most estimates, if global temperature rise more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, the results may well be catastrophic and irreversible. 14 of the 15 warmest years on record have occurred since the year 2000, and 2015 is on pace to be the warmest year of all, said President Barack Obama at the Paris Conference's first session. No nation, large or small, wealthy or poor, is immune to what this means. So what must be done? First, all major economies must put forward decisive national actions that will reduce their emissions and begin to turn the corner on climate change, said the president. Already, nations responsible for most of the global emissions have set their targets. By 2030, the European Union will cut its emissions by 40% from 1990 levels. The U.S. will cut its emissions by 26 to 28% from 2005 levels by 2025. And China's emissions will peak by 2030. The president also called for a mechanism to review countries' commitments and financing to help developing countries address climate change. In essence, said U.S. Special Envoy for Climate Change Todd Stern, the idea is to accelerate the transformation of the energy base of the global economy from high to low carbon. The good news is that we are already moving in that direction, said President Obama.
Last year, the global economy grew while global carbon emissions from burning fossil fuels stayed flat. We've proved that strong economic growth and a safer environment no longer have to conflict with one another. They can work in concert with one another.
There is such a thing as being too late, and when it comes to climate change, that hour is almost upon us, said President Obama. But if we act here, if we act now, if we place our own short-term interests behind the air that our young people will breathe, and the food that they will eat, and the water that they will drink, and the hopes and dreams that sustain their lives, then we won't be too late for them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.